Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Comic-Con Stars. It's good to be with everybody. Last week we were absent because we were up there involved with May the 4th Be With You in Raleigh and had a blast. Glad to be up there, and so we're glad to be back down here. And it so anyway, it's awesome to have everybody here with us. And this is Dr. John, and the first thing I want to do is I want to welcome our co-host tonight. First of all, co-host Papastro Maestro, how are you doing tonight?
Wonderful. I'm doing my power walk as we speak, still getting over jet lag from Vegas, still grinding, lots going on. I'm getting ready for the Tidewater Comic-Con this weekend with you, Dr. John, and DJ's decals, and things are just rocking and rolling.
They really are. We've been having having a pretty good time, and you just came back from Vegas at the Cauliflower Alley Club, and Dorothy was the big star of that show, wasn't she?
She was. She killed it in the slots, and she scared people over the top rope, and all these photo ops. I mean, gosh, she was like walking the red carpet and everything in Vegas, man.
All right, let me ask you this. You're the only person you've only told me this once, but didn't she even startle Gerald Briscoe? Didn't she startle him?
Oh, he about knocked Pat Patterson down when he saw Dorothy. It was great.
That's awesome.
About knocked him and the whole WWE representatives, all Steamboat, Slaughter, all them, that was great.
Wow, that's pretty cool. All right, glad to have you here.
Fantastic.
Liz Allred, we are glad to have you here. How are you doing, dear?
I am fantastic. So glad to be invited back. I really like talking with you guys.
The infamous one.
infamous Queen Liz. We're always glad
Queen
to have
Liz.
You. You add some sparkle to this crowd, I'll tell you. Papa Stro, you and we need some sparkle, don't we?
yeah. I told Dorothy all about Liz. Already a big fan.
Well, see, I run with rainbows and glitter all the time, so you just never know.
Nice.
Okay, that's good. I guess before we introduce our guest, I'll say that the couple things that are on docket are this weekend, Tidewater Comic-Con. And at 7 p.m. at Dave and Buster's on Saturday night, we are having Papa Stro. We're having a meeting of the Papa Stro Fan Club at Dave and Buster's in Virginia Beach, Virginia. You will be there, won't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't miss it for the world. And Dave and Buster's, great friends of mine, and you, Dr. John, and like the whole gang, Tidewater Comic-Con crew, it's going to be a great time. I can't wait.
Oh, it's going to be fun. I'm just smiling all over. My vacation starts tomorrow on my way up to Virginia Beach. Now, we are privileged to have a very exciting, incredible filmmaker. I was joking with him before the show. I said, this is the next Stanley Kubrick. And I think he said, well, I don't know about that, but I tell you what, his stuff is great. And by the way, before I introduce him, if you go to the Comic-Con Stars website, you will see a link to Andrew Huggins' film page where you can watch all of his shorts that he's done on Vimeo. So, Andrew, I want to take this opportunity to welcome you to Comic-Con Stars. How are you doing today?
Thank you so much. I'm doing great. It's awesome to be talking with you guys, and I really appreciate you having me on.
We're glad to have you here. We got a lively crowd tonight. So, and Liz always brings the glitter. I'm gonna tell you that. So we're gonna have a lot of fun. I guess first of all, I'll tell everybody that you are from Charlotte, North Carolina, right now. You're a filmmaker. Been a filmmaker for a number of years. You've won many film awards. And you got a page up on your website that shows some of the shorts that you've done. So why don't you start by telling us what you like about filmmaking and why do you do it?
Yeah, well, I've been making short films for almost exactly a little over 5 years now. I kind of a quick like history for me of how I got into it. I'm 27 now, and when I was 16, I kind of, you know, I play a lot of video games, watch a lot of movies, and be kind of obsessed with how these things were made, not just satisfied and enjoying them as entertainment, but kind of wanting, you know, to know the craft behind it. So I kind of messed around at a couple of different universities. I went to Appalachian State University my freshman year. I went to UNC Charlotte my sophomore year, and I wound up after that at the Art Institute of Charlotte and did a three-year filmmaking degree there. And that's, I finished that in 2013 and have just been trying to, you know, make short quality short films and do festivals and kind of, you know, try to make a career out of it since then. And it's been going well. You know, just the love for storytelling was always there. And I kind of, you know, needed to know how stories were crafted in terms of camera and actors' performance and all the details. So, you know, about 5 years ago, I kind of got into that and started, you know, making short films.
Gotcha. That's a good story. And I like what you said about learning the art and the craft of storytelling, because there's a lot to that, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. You know, when you're younger, I guess you kind of think, you know, I would write down like sci-fi and fantasy type, you know, short stories when I was really young. And, you know, they're always, it was inevitable. The first thing I ever wrote when I was little was called Light Wars. It was a Star Wars ripoff. It was completely Star Wars, but I just changed everyone's name. Like, I changed Luke Skywalker's name to Mike Groundrunner, like the exact opposite. And I would do these short stories, but it was inevitable they would be influenced by Star Wars or Lord of the Rings or whatever. So as I got older, it was like, you know, well, how do I create my own? How do I, you know, first of all, it's in terms of actual filmmaking and creating budgets for even just short films, fantasy elements a lot of times are really tough. You know, it costs a lot to make, you know, like a sci-fi short film or something. So I started coming up with ideas that were more grounded in reality and were more kind of gritty and real and mostly straight up dramatic films. I've done a couple comedies, but, you know, mostly stuff that was, you know, trying to be dramatic. And there is a lot more to actual, you know, the craft of storytelling, of, you know, writing characters that have motivated decisions and they're justified in what they do. And kind of, you know, that's kind of how I approach it. Everything is that I've done is mostly character driven. I've done some things that are more plot driven, like the story, just the story itself drives everything, and you don't get to know the characters as much. But most of the stuff I've done is strictly like making each character unique and interesting and then justifying their actions from there to create some kind of narrative. So anyway, yeah, it's fun. You know, Martin Scorsese says he's still learning on every film he does. So that's kind of an awesome thing that I always go back to. I've been doing this for like 5 years now. And it excites me that I'm just going to keep learning, you know, how to do these things as I get older. But, yeah, that's kind of, you know, my perspective on creating stories a little bit.
You know, I liked what you said about you keep learning. I had a conversation with one of our co-hosts, Papa Stro Maestro, and I know he is one of the most accomplished people in the wrestling ring, and he knows a lot of mixed martial arts. But Papa Stro, you told me one time that you keep learning every day and every time you go out there to wrestle in front of a crowd, don't you?
Well, it's just like Anthony mentioned, a common denominator with everything that we do, whether it be film, acting, wrestling, MMA, sports, entertainment, what have you, is the fact that we keep on learning our craft and keep on bettering our craft. I've had many veterans tell me through the years that when you think you know everything there is to know about a certain craft or a product or a sport or what have you, then it's time to quit and hang it up. So you always want to constantly learn, always evolve, always better yourself, because, I mean, the world changes, you change with it, you know what I mean? And you got to keep on getting better and better. I mean, that's what makes our business worth the way it is, and, I mean, that's the way the world goes around.
That's exactly right.
Liz,
you are the queen of the props. Talk to us on this topic.
You know, I was just going to say, you know, the thing that I've learned the most is the moment you stop learning is the moment you've lost the craft. And I can say that, you know, when I started my, because I'm also in the film industry too, and I'd really love to chit chat with you at another time as well. But, you know, what I found is I started out in directing. I started out, you know, wanting to basically manipulate people to do whatever it is I needed for the script. And then from there, I found I had more control and learned through camera. And then I wanted to do completely nothing but camera operations. You know, what I think it is nature guides you kind of where you need to be. And you kind of learn tidbits here and here. And without growth,
sure,
I wouldn't be where I am now. And I love art department. I love building props. I love dressing sets. I love the whole concept of the art aspect of putting all those components together to make a scene look real. And I think without growth, I never would have got where I am now. And I was at a point that I wanted to lose the craft and, you know, the whole entire field and just go into a whole other field for the rest of my life until I hit the art department. And all of a sudden, it just rejuvenated. So I think, you know, when you stop learning is when you lose the craft. And I kind of believe that. So at that moment, at that pivotal turning point when I was like, you know what, I might be just done with this. I'm just going to go back to veterinarian school. You know, I was like, I don't think this is for me anymore. All of a sudden, you know, a job fell in my lap where they required me to do all kinds of prop works and basically distress props to make them look aged. And from that moment forward, it was just a whole new rejuvenation for the whole entire film of filmmaking, like the whole entire genre of filmmaking. And for me, I think that's what changed my perspective on my future, my career. And just this past week alone, you know, I built a 3-foot diameter, 2.5-foot well out of styrofoam handmade bricks. And to me, like, this is where happiness is. And who knows where it's going to lead me, because this is teaching me to do other things. So growth is the key to anybody's personal success, I believe, personally.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Yeah.
You're 100% right there. I have an old phrase that I learned it the hard way. The minute that you think you're good, there is someone right around the corner that's better than you because they don't have the ego. And I learned that, and I try to keep my head down and keep moving as hard as I can, because I know that you can always learn. And Andrew, that was a great thing you said about filmmaking. What I'd like for you to do, two films of yours that have won a ton of awards. One is called Four Pies. Unless you've seen it, you have no idea what that is about. Andrew, since it's short enough, I mean, I don't think you're being too telling everybody a little bit about Four Pies. How did you come up with this idea? And that's a film that touches everyone's heart, because we've all been through something like that. Go.
Yeah, well, thanks for the kind words about it. And I do love talking about that one, because it was an extremely collaborative, you know, effort, whereas other short films I'd done, you know, I write it, I direct it, I really produce it on my own, and then I end up, you know, editing it. You kind of do everything except shoot it. I have a awesome cinematographer friend of mine that I use, Derek Donovan, for all my projects. He did Four Pies as well. But I would kind of end up doing everything. With Four Pies, that was a script I did not write. It was written by Tara Lynn Marcel, who's a Charlotte-based writer-director. She's directed her first feature recently, and she writes all sorts of stuff. She wrote it with the two actresses that are in the film, Vanessa Orr and Catherine Trail. And I didn't put any kind of based on a true story or anything in the film or in the credits, but it's based 100% off of Catherine Trail's life, something that actually happened to her. So in the story of that film is, when I think Catherine at the time was like 22, she was really young, and she has two sisters in the film. Well, their mom they woke up one morning and they had notes from their mother on the refrigerator, personal notes to each of them, and there was, and one to their father, and there were four pies. The kind of pie is a Kushaw pie, and they, she had baked four pies for each member of her family, and then she had gone to bed and she passed away in her sleep. So they kind of woke up to these notes and these pies, and the film, you know, the script that they wrote for it is just kind of, you know, really intimate as far as showing the relationship between the three sisters. And then especially when you see their father, who an actor named Lee Armstrong plays in that film, you know, he's just completely broken, you know, over what's happened. And Catherine, her character, which is, you know, based on her life, she has to be kind of the strong one to kind of be there for her sisters, and one of which is really torn up over what's happened to the mother and is kind of really struggling to even process it, and the other one is almost in denial about it. Not denial, but she's kind of like, okay, this happened, and we just need to go through her clothes and go and give things away and be done with this. So I always was a big fan of the script from when they sent it to me. I think it took about 6 months from when they sent it to me, and then we actually filmed it. But, you know, I love family stories. It's just a story about three sisters and their father and how this, you know, the passing of their mother deeply affected them. And, you know, it was a project where there wasn't any need for visual or special effects or any like off the wall crazy camera work. It's all like just pretty much stationary tripod shots, letting the actors kind of create the film and just be sure to capture them as best we could. But yeah, that one, you know, I've become really good friends with Vanessa Orr, Catherine Trail. We had Bonnie Johnson in the film, Suzanne Sadler, Lee Armstrong. All of these people are amazing people to work with, and that was a special film for me because I got to work with these amazing actors, and the story was written, and it was really well written, and it was the first time that I had ever directed something that I didn't write, so I had a challenge and kind of, you know, I wasn't the one that thought of all of these scenes, all of these things. I had to interpret them my own way, but that one's doing festivals. It'll still do festivals through the summer. We made it last August, so it'll probably have about a year's worth of time being submitted to things. And we have a screening of it coming up this weekend at the Longleaf Film Festival in Raleigh that we're really looking forward to. I love that festival. But, yeah, that's kind of a little history of the film and what it was like to make it.
Well, sounds good. I know it was very sad. It really was. If anyone has ever lost a parent or a loved one that was very special to you, it brings back those memories, and that's what I liked about it. It shot me back to earlier days when I had something like that happen to me. So just great thing. And that's won best short film at several film festivals, hasn't it?
That one's won the top award at two festivals, I think, and then it's gotten some Best Actress awards. It's gotten Best Family Film, which you know, just kind of neat for me because I've made some pretty dark films and some that are pretty much straight up horror or thriller genre, and then this one was just a nice. It's kind of a family film, you know, in the way that it's shot and the way that it's especially scored, the music by Alex Arntzen is really gives it that feel. And one of the really special, I think probably will remain the most special moment that film's had as far as the festivals it's done, is there was a festival called the New Classic Cinema Festival, and they gave us Best Actress for it, and I assumed it would go to Catherine Trail, who plays the lead in the film. But they split it to all three women that play the sisters in the film. They gave it to all three of them, Bonnie Johnson and Suzanne Sadler as well. And that was special to be like, oh, that's, you know, they wanted to recognize, you know, these ladies, and they the note that they sent me was, you know, we couldn't decide which of the three to give it to, so we just gave it to all three. So that's probably the most, you know, special and memorable award that it's gotten. But yeah, it's had a nice run since last fall, and it's still, you know, has been submitted to quite a few festivals. And I think with that film in particular, you know, it's also has the potential to be kind of a fresh, like a just kind of a nice surprise for festival programmers. It's not, you know, it's rated G. There's nothing, you know, violent. There's nothing, and I've made films that are violent, you know, whatever that would make a film like rated R or however you think about it. But, you know, Four Pies is just kind of a nice family film, you know?
Right. Well, it's a wonderful film, and everybody can check it out. We've got a link to Andrew's website, the page where he has all his films, and I invite everyone to take a look at them. They're really great. Now, for all the, I hate using this word, but sometimes it's the correct word, for all the wonderfulness that you've got in Four Pies, there's not a lot of wonderfulness in Civil, is there?
Yes, you're right. Civil is really different.
Tell the story first so that people can get an idea of what this thing is about. It was pretty shocking.
Yes, Civil. I had done. There's a little bit of a kind of a backstory leading up to making Civil. I had done for my thesis film, my senior thesis film in film school, I bit off way more than I could chew, and did a 22-minute post-Civil War drama called Where the Wolves Lie. And we had an amazing experience making that film, but I you know, choosing to do that in the Civil War era got me kind of like addicted in a sense to making period pieces, because we pulled it off. We had, you know, wardrobe and props and dialogue that, you know, I think successfully put the audience in that time period. So I kind of wanted to do that again. So then I made another short film called Grit. And then after that, I said, I kind of want to do three of these, like make it, they're not related story-wise, but make a trilogy in a sense of three of these Civil War era films. And I had this script that I had written half of at one point, and then didn't come back to it until like 4 months later for whatever reason, but wrote it in those two sittings, and that was Civil. And it was the first film that I did that was pretty much plot driven. Like, it's not really character driven. You don't ever necessarily find out like a bunch of like layers and backstory to each character. There are six characters, and the film's 8 minutes long, and it packs a lot in there, and it's all about the just simply the plot of like what happens to these characters. So I went back to I needed, you know, a field and like a shed or a barn. So I went back to a location in Kannapolis, North Carolina, that I had shot at for Where the Wolves Lie, called Rumpel Farm. This awesome family, the Rumpels, have all this land and this barn that we use for Where the Wolves Lie and Civil. And Civil was just kind of, you know, it was absolutely the most intense. We shot it in one day. It was the most intense day I've ever had on a set, just because of the nature of the film. It was just, you know, you have everything kind of, we shot it in sequence, so just in the order of which the story happens. So at the end, you know, it just boils to this kind of bizarre, insane scenario, and watching the actors do what they did on that film that day was something that I'll definitely never forget. That was Catherine Trail. That was before Four Pies, so it was the second time I'd worked with her, and she's won a Best Actress Award for that film. Then we had Devin Walker, who plays the kind of the lead in the film, co-lead with Catherine. He plays an African-American Union soldier, and he won Best Supporting Actor Award for the film at a film festival in New York City. And that one is something I'm really proud of, but in a way, you know, it's almost like everything that I made since then has had to almost live up to it in a sense, you know, because and that's credit to the actors. Like Mike Ruff was also a Charlotte actor that did an incredible job in that film. And they just created such an intense environment on set, and it really translated when I went to edit the film. And that's one I'm definitely really proud of. We had an instance where there was kind of the climax of the film, and we were shooting it. It was either the first or second take of it, and our gaffer and our key grip had gone outside the barn and to hide from the camera while we shot the scene. And our key grip came up to me later and was like, man, during that one take, you know, me and his name's James Parsons, and the gaffer was Ryan Johnson. He said, me and Ryan just looked at each other and we're like, we don't even want to be inside that barn. Like, we can like feel the intensity, you know, of what's going on in there. I was like, yeah, that's, you know, I can't necessarily take all the credit for that. That's, that was Catherine and Devin doing something kind of special for that film. But, that one changed my career in a sense. It really helped get me into festivals. And, it was something I could show to people and be like, you know, let's just, I've made 3 Civil War films, but they all kind of culminated in Civil, like, you know, our my casting through, you know, our abilities kind of getting more improved and polished. And that one, almost exactly 2 years ago, we filmed that one. And it's been an absolute blast kind of going around to festivals with that film.
For those of you that don't know about the film, it's about a young Union soldier who learns that when his superior says kill, he's supposed to kill, and he sure doesn't like it. From there, I'm not going to go any farther. I think everybody should see it. But do you think that's a good description of how it starts, Andrew?
Yeah, I think that's a great description. You know, kind of, that's a great way to set it up, I think.
Yeah. Now, since we've got 3 people, Papa Stroh and Liz and you, who are all film people, I want to ask you one of your questions. Tell us the toughest thing that you've had to do on screen, and what was one of the funniest things that's happened to you while you were making a film? Because I know you've all made films. I'm going to start with the queen tonight, Liz. Then I'll go to Papa Stroh, and then I'll go to Andrew. So, Liz, tell us what was the toughest situation you've been in, and what was the funniest?
Okay, so this past fall, we did a movie called Thicker Than Blood, which I mentioned on one of the other podcasts. That is an HIV-based film involving a family basically telling the story of this young man and how the family dynamic has changed in his life because he's come out as gay. And, I don't want to ruin the integrity of the film because I really want you to see it. It's called Thicker Than Blood. But there was a scene in this particular film where the younger of the two boys, who I believe is in his mid-20s at this point, basically confronts his father for the way his father has been treating him because he's gay. And there was a physically violent scene where he gets slammed against the wall, and it's almost like the hate and anger in the father is so intense. It was like the atmosphere in the entire room was just electric, and there were a lot of people. That particular day was one of the darkest days on set. So when he slammed the guy against the wall and he spewed this pure hatred, and the actual actor, the guy, is super nice and super cool, but you got lost in that moment, and you were almost scared that he was going to physically hurt him in that moment. Majority of people who have had to experience some kind of domestic, you know, dispute or some kind of family dynamic in that sense, everybody on set that particular day, it was like they were untouchable. You didn't want to talk to anybody. You didn't want to speak to anybody. You couldn't do anything but kind of revert back to a moment in your history when you experienced something like that yourself. So I think that might have been the hardest and toughest thing I've had to do. Now, obviously not step building or dressing or holding a camera for 16 hours kind of thing, but emotionally that was like the most charged day I've ever had on set. And that was awful. But I think the film was great for it, and we got through it. And at the end of the day, that's one of the most vibrant scenes in the whole film. It's the one thing that really sticks out to me. As far as funny, you know, I work on a lot of independent films, and for me, most every day, if you can find something fun, you can thrive on this smaller set. So I can't really pick one thing, like, off the top of my head. You know, I like to live every day as if it's a fun day until we have those moments like the last one. So if I think of something later, I'll let you know. But we always try to have some kind of fun. I know one day we had one of the, I think it was the script supervisor's girlfriend, was fostering puppies. And she had to go to some kind of doctor's appointment, I think it was. Or for whatever reason, she needed to bring the puppies to set. So we had two beautiful foster puppies, and they might have been 6 weeks, 8 weeks old. I mean, they were tiny puppies. And so anyways, we had kind of everybody, male, female, didn't matter. Everybody had to come apart when the puppies came to location, and we all just had to take five. I mean, I think that's pretty funny. So.
Yep, that's good. Papa Stroh, before you say anything, I have to tell a funny story about puppy rescue. I brought a friend of mine down to Myrtle Beach, Ralph Burrell. He was a broadcast consultant. In fact, he was one of the founders of MSNBC. So he said, you know, I've got to go to this radio station, and they want me to do some consulting, and they want me to watch their news program and see what I think. I said, well, could I come too? He said, sure. So we got there, and it was like on a Tuesday night in Myrtle Beach. This was probably 15 years ago, before Myrtle Beach was very interesting, even, to be honest with you. And so the lead story was a rescue of five puppies from underneath a burning house. And it was just so funny. My buddy Ralph looked at everybody and said, you don't need me, you just need a better town. If that's the lead story in this town, you just need a better town. I thought that was kind of funny. It was very true. And we've since got a better town. It's a little more exciting. All right, Papa Stroh, what was a cool moment that you remember, and what was fun on a stage? And then, Andrew, you're next.
Oh, let's see. Oh, goodness. I could tell you the funny part was this film I was filming. Well, actually, I'm part of, actually, off an island off the Atlantic. It was called Cos Island, in which it was like a bunch of college kids ended up on this island at a big, like, party. And turns out there's, like, this vampire and this killer on the same island. And, like, eventually these guys are going to meet for a big, you know, finale. And in between the process, you know, there was going to be a big fight going on the island. And, I mean, we had, oh, my God, it was like a motley crew of people. I mean, first time we get to the island, rather, I took a bump over the boat right in the water. You know what I mean? It was doomed from the start. And the ferry guys forgot to pick us up later on night. So it's like a scene of Survivor. I kid you not. We had tiki lamps and torches, and I mean, we're all like full of sand, and I mean, we had generators running the cameras and the makeup people. We had like Russian rock, a lady's Russian rock band from Russia there, bikers from Sweden, me and a couple of wrestlers, a bunch of you know, actors and actresses, extras. It was a cluster, and our catering, my gosh, someone forgot the catering. All we had was like this little pepperoni dish with a little bit of chicken, you know, from someone got from Walmart, right? So we're starving and we're thirsty in this island, and I had to get up, I had to be at a gig the next day, and luckily the ferry people come up and come to the island to take us back, and I'm hauling because I had a gig like two states over. You know, and I get into the mainland. I took a quick shower in the hotel, and I took off. I get to the place. I'm still got sand all over me. I kid you not. It was brutal. But in between that process, while we're taking a break off set, right, we're all delirious that night, and I was doing impersonation, so the director thought he would be cute and, like, film one of my impersonations. I was impersonating Chris Rock, right? And so I figured I'd do a Chris Rock, you know, promoting the Koss Island bit, you know, and in which, you know, he films it, and I go, "If you don't like watching scary movies, then your dumb ass needs to turn the channel or turn the TV off, because you're watching a scary movie right now, Koss Island," you know. Stuff like that. Oh, geez. And then the whole sister are busting laughing, you know what I mean?
You get A+.
And
that.
Oh yeah, it was nuts. It was nuts. But and there was another one where this was 12/24. It was like my first horror movie, where I was playing the truck driving killer, kind of similar to the Matthew McConaughey role in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, in which I studied him, you know, for that role, right? And one of the Scream Queens, he's been in like a bunch of horror flicks, Debney Penn, was my last victim, who turned out to be like a zombie or something, right? But I'm acting a fool in the role, right? I'm wired on like five Red Bulls in me, plus coffee, all the whole night, you know, and I'm
beating the
stuck. I'm acting. Yeah, I'm just, you know, it was just part of the role, you know what I mean? I was supposed to act crazy, and, you know, and, but I guess I was a little bit too convincing, because she kept trying to stand there. She couldn't, she was motionless. She was supposed to say, not, you know, no facial expression, nothing, right? But I kept making her laugh the whole time, and finally she just looked at me, I'm dead, damn it. Please, you're killing me, right? You know, because I kept making these funny faces at her the whole time. But, it was pretty hilarious. But yeah, those are just some of the hardest and craziest times on set I've been through. Some of the many, I guess.
Got you. Well, those are great. All right, Andrew, tell us a tough time. Oh, by the way, I do want to welcome, is Dave Atwell in the room?
Hey, good evening, everybody. I appreciate you letting me be a little late for class tonight. This detective work has no steady time, so. I'm officially off work.
Right.
I'm on the road. So if you're getting too much feedback, let me know, and I'll wait till I get to the house.
It's all good. We're going to let Andrew share a good and a bad time on the set. And then Andrew is a screenwriter, and that's one reason I wanted you to be here tonight. So you guys are going to talk a little bit of writing. All right, so Andrew, tell us a good time and a bad time for you on the set.
Bad time, I think this qualifies as this was probably like 4 years ago. We were shooting a film out in the woods in Monroe, North Carolina, and I was wearing long pants, but I started to feel like this sting at my ankles and at my feet, and I rolled my pants up, and I had like hundreds of fire ants on me. And
oh my God, bless
stuck
you.
Out in the middle of the woods. Yeah, it was awful. So I just kind of chanced through.
Wow.
It was, I rolled my pants up. I took my shoes and my socks off, and I was no contribution to the film whatsoever that day. I don't remember what my position even was on set that day, but I was not of much use. I apparently just stepped into a huge thing of fire ants. But fun time, but also kind of sad in a way. We were shooting a film. It was like it's called The Bishop Boys. It's like a 7-minute comedy that we had to rob a convenience store for the film. And we used a place that's no longer there, the Common Market in South End in Charlotte. And these two brothers and their father run into the convenience store with like ski masks and shotguns and stuff, and they're robbing the store. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to play the clerk. Like, I'm going to, you know, just be behind the register. And we filmed it from the guy working at the store that night, staying with us to keep the store open for us, said, I can get you the security camera footage, like the four different angles, black and white, like, you know, it would be, you know, the real deal would look really great in the film. It's like, I can get you that footage of these guys coming in, like, you know, robbing the store. So we ran through it a bunch of different ways. They would run in, point the shotguns at me. One of our, Russ Bryan, who played the younger brother, he ran up and down the aisles like he couldn't find me, and then, you know, would run back over to me, and we had all these different takes of it. And the guy that was working that told us we could have a security camera footage, I don't know what authority he told us that on, but I talked to the actual managers after that, and they were like, yeah, we definitely can't give that to you. So we had all these, we had like 12, 15 different takes of doing this stuff, we had none of the footage. We couldn't use it. So the film, if you watch the film, it's definitely not there, and you're kind of wondering, like, oh, I wish I could kind of see them robbing this place. But the last one that kind of, you know, yeah, that was a bummer. But another short example, we made a film four or five years ago called The Debit, which is like the debt but mispronouncing. And we did it, and the person that wrote the script wrote it to be dramatic. It was like a four-page script, and it was supposed to be, you know, kind of intense and dramatic. And that person never showed up to film the skit that day. So we said, okay, we're going to – this script is horrible. It's really bad anyway. So we're going to act it on par with how it's written. So we did, and that one's on up online too. It's a short one. It's like 4.5 minutes, but that film is intentionally acted really, really horribly, and it's this weird. My friend that did it with me, Tony Query, has a really interesting sense of like comedic style with the way that he intentionally acts this film in a bad way. And that film was just something funny we would kind of watch and go back to from time to time. But then I saw online this year that there was a festival in New York City called the Whoops Film Festival, specifically for films like ours that were like, you know, horrible films. Just, you know, they weren't well made.
Yeah.
They were, on our part, it was intentional, but so I submitted it to that, and this was like a month ago. I won Worst Actor, we won Worst Short Film, and we won Worst Director, even though there's no director. But
nice.
Anyway, just a few examples of kind of having fun on set.
That's awesome.
Well, now, hold on. Ed Wood didn't even get that much fame for being bad.
I know,
that's
yeah.
Awesome.
It was kind of kind of in that like Ed Wood genre of like I'm trying to think. There's another I'm thinking of I can't remember his name. There's, you know, with those directors that unfortunately, you know, kind of made a career for themselves with those types
of
movies.
The funny
but
thing
we,
is like that's the whole horror industry now. Like you can be a terrible horror film and they are just going to churn that out one after the after, you know, after
know,
the other, after
yeah.
the other, after the other, the whole horror
right.
industry. So yeah, it's amazing they have the festival for that too, but to be in a festival like that and not be a horror film, that's hilarious because I mean, it's just turnkey for horror films right now. And you can make money.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
If you ever go and watch the short, you'll definitely see why, you know, it's, it won awards for how bad it was.
Okay, you have truly entertained us there, Andrew. That's one of the best things I've heard in a long time. But right now, you told me when we were talking the other day that you are really into script writing. You are into the story.
Yeah.
And you are into. You told me it was really kind of cool. You said if you do your work as a writer, it's not so hard to produce the film, correct?
See, I think you might be my soulmate,
yeah.
though, really, since you're a writer.
so tell us what you think, and then Dave Atwell, since you are our expert writer, comment on what you think.
Expert.
Listen, I'm
expert writer.
Come on,
no pressure.
not in sales. All right, Andrew, tell us what's good.
Yeah, well, you know, with screenwriting, I like I kind of mentioned before, I always love to write stories. When I was in school and then college, at one point I was an English major. I mean, writing was the only thing that I could really do very well academically. It was always writing and history, and as opposed to being like a science and math person, you know. So then when I went to film school and learned the formatting, you know, the structure and the rules, and then some of the kind of like unspoken rules of how you're supposed to script things out, you know, I became pretty obsessed with it and fascinated with it. And, you know, that process of whether it's 2 pages or, you know, I've only written 1 feature length script, but, you know, whether it's 2 pages or something like feature length, you know, I always kind of think of it in the same way of you have to have, or what I like to have is, you know, interesting subtext for the characters, you know, what, you know, so we all know sometimes you're watching a movie and you're an hour in and you're like, man, I just don't really care what these people do anymore, you know? So just kind of creating, whether it's suspense or tension or laughter, you know, doing that with, layers and layers of subtext and justified motivation for characters, and you know, screenwriting is, and then kind of what you, like what you had brought up, if you do those things and if you really write the appropriate amount of detail, you know, not too much to where actors are reading it and they can barely even comprehend what's going on because there's so much detail, but kind of the appropriate balance of that information, it seems to me like there is less work to do on set later on. I mean, the process I go through is, you know, I write the script, then I write character backstories and descriptions and just general documents of anything that could help the actor. I send those to the actors, and then we can email or talk on the phone, whatever it may be, to kind of flesh things out and get into detail with these things. And then there's just less questions on set later on. I've also been extremely blessed to work with actors that I really like and are really good at what they do. And we're able to just execute and just, you know, we know once we get blocking down, I can just work with my DP on visuals, and then the actor is, you know, with minimal confusion and questions, you know, we all kind of know what's happening. And if that information is in the script appropriately, then, you know, it's awesome. You can just kind of, you know, when you're making short films in a day or 2 day or a weekend and you have barely any money and you're trying to tell the story, it just helps to kind of be ahead of the game that a little bit that way.
You know what I like about what you said? You know, coming from a theater background, it's up to the talent individually to come up with their own backstory. But what you're saying is you're coming up with a backstory for them. That saves a lot of time. That saves a lot of development on their part. And it also saves on what you may or may not be able to expect when they're on set. I kind of like that. And if you're okay with that, I'm going to steal that from you.
Yeah. And you know, there are plenty of times when, you know, actors – we'll say, we'll have talked about a backstory and a description of kind of, you know, where they're coming from. But then, you know, it definitely happens on set in the moment, bam, you know, they come up with something. And I usually don't turn that down or say no when
right.
they say, you know, what if, you know, it was like this. It's like a film, the second Civil War film we did, Grit, that one, I had 2 really good actors for that one, Russ Bryan and Dave Garrett. And it's about a Confederate soldier and a Union soldier talking together in the woods by a fire. And they came up together with this idea and asked me, what if these guys were brothers that had been separated, and in some crazy circumstance, one ended up fighting for the Confederacy and one for the Union. And I said, that's awesome. Like, that, if that it can add that extra layer and, you know, can motivate your performances in an interesting way, let's do that. And it's not something you'd ever know by watching the film. It's not in the script. It's not, you know, that's not part of the story technically. But, you know, when actors come up with stuff, I've never had an actor honestly come up with something like that and then me be like, no, that's a horrible idea. You know, it's interesting the things that from their perspective of having to perform, because I am not a performer. The only thing I've won as far as that goes is worst actor. I am not a performer at all. It's interesting to, you know, hear what they come up with. And I love that part of it.
Well, you
Andrew,
know, you like Civil War films.
I want
to
win worst actor.
What's that?
Go ahead, Liz. I'm sorry. I said I want to win worst actor sometime. I do.
Since you like Civil War films, I think you might really like this movie that I worked on back in 2014. We shot and filmed in Old Stagville in Durham, North Carolina. And it is a Civil War piece. It's about two Union soldiers that get stuck below the line. They are held captive, and it's about a slave that helps them get back above the line to continue fighting. And I think you might actually like the story. It's based on a true story. It's based on journals that the executive producers, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and don't quote me on this because I'm not exactly 100% sure, but I think some of the executive producers are the family members of the people who found the journals. So
is that
it
Union
is
based, Bound?
It, yes.
That's it the name
based,
of it?
Union Bound. And it's based on those journals about what happened.
Nice.
And it's about a slave that helps two Union soldiers get back above
yeah.
the line to keep fighting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fantastic story.
Wow.
And like I said, it was a locally shot film. I think it was in, I believe, June of 2014. And matter of fact, ironically enough, the last day that I worked on it was the day I graduated from film school. And I almost missed graduation because I got wrapped up into working
oh, wow.
on the film set.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Anyways,
I actually did
oh.
see that film at a festival.
Great.
I think it was Longleaf. It was at a couple festivals
nice.
That I was at in 2016 maybe. But, yeah, that's awesome
yeah.
that you worked on that. That's a really great story.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
that
film.
Sean Stone
all
was
right,
in it as the guy who wrote the journals. That's who he was playing.
Mm-hmm.
Randy
okay.
Wayne, I don't know if you remember seeing him. I think he was. If I'm not mistaken, he was in the second Honey. And then Tank Jones, who is a phenomenal actor. I love Tank to pieces. He and I became really close friends after the film wrapped. But, you know, I just think the world of Tank, and he did an amazing job in this film. I mean, taking the concept and making it his own. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I can't say enough about Tank. He's an amazing guy. But the film itself, phenomenal. If you get a chance to see it, that'd be great. And the company that I usually work for, they call me in to help on stuff, is Meeting Street Productions, and that's one of the big dogs in that particular film who got it going. But yeah, I'm thoroughly pleased with that, and I think if you like Civil War stuff, you'll really enjoy this film.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's great. Dave Atwell, you've been sitting there.
Sure.
You've been listening to what Andrew's been saying. Are you ready? You're on cue. Talk to us
well,
about
you know,
how
I'm
you
gonna...
write and how it parallels with what you're talking about.
I'll take it for a moment in a different direction. I just finally broke down and watched Suicide Squad last week. And I, as a writer, now granted I'm not Charles Dickens by any stretch of imagination, but I do have published work out there that a lot of people have said, hey, Dave, I love this stuff, you know. So I got to be doing
Hello.
Something right or else I'd be growing food instead of writing, you know. So I'm watching this. And that script, there had to have been somebody on that movie set that could have stopped it and said, guys, this thing's
right?
spaghetti. It is all over the place. When you watch the movie, it is all over the place. When you look at the characters, they are all over the place. It's almost as if
I got Disney watching
different
it.
Guys. Yeah. It's like they got 15 different guys together and said, okay, you write his part, you write her part, you write his part, and then you just squished it together and made a movie out of it. So, yeah, I totally agree with you. When it comes down to brass tacks, a script, because of the fact that it's not a novel. So you could open up one of my books and you know right away who's who, what's what. You can picture in your mind what the place looks like. You can picture what they dress. Why? Because it's there. It's there in words. But well, on a script, it's more of a, you know, conversationally based writing. It's more about, you dive more into the monologue than what you do the actual backdrop. And, you know, and when I go into script writing, that would be my biggest fear, is that I'd be overly, because if you read the books, mine are heavy dialogue. You know what I mean? There's a lot of talking in my books, but that's how you develop your characters. That's how you develop your storyline. You got to have these people talking. You can't just, you can't call the game all the time as a writer. You got to let the characters do the talking. That said, when you're writing a movie script, you know, you've got to provide as much information as possible to these actors, so they know, hey, does this guy have a chip on his shoulder? Hey, is this guy a fireman, or is he a construction worker? You know, and you'll, otherwise you'll have the village people there on set. You've got to really got to do your homework on that. And those scripts versus, you know, my books range anywhere between 85,000 to 125,000 words, okay? A script ain't going to be that way. But on the flip side, the script writing job is harder because you don't have the luxury of all those words to get it out. You know what I mean?
That's speaking, the problem I have with
it. Speaking, speaking of village people, a movie that's premiering soon that I'm in called The Rack Pack. It's got, not only has C. Thomas Howell in it, and I'm in it, but also Randy Jones of the Village People is actually in it, and he's the scoutmaster.
Oh, wow.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
No, thanks. I'll pass on that one. Yeah. Just watch.
It's hilarious.
Keep one eye open, will you?
Oh, man.
But... yeah, my hat's off to the script writers, because you guys definitely have a harder job, though it could be a shorter job than writing a novel. You don't have the luxury of all those pages to get out what you're trying to say. You have to concentrate on the dialogue.
Right.
And then you actually have to lean on the actors to convey what you're getting through. And that's one of the things with my series is there are several people that I know that are, you know, not household names when it comes down to acting, but they're the guys that I fashioned these characters after. So somebody buys rights to the book series, I'm going to say, all right, sounds good.
YMCA.
And I want Stro to play the construction worker in The Village People, you know?
Nice.
Yeah.
I like the Indian. He's
awesome,
my favorite.
Awesome.
I'll take Hacksaw Jim Duggan's 2x4 gimmick.
Exactly.
Whatever you do, don't say ho around the village people, okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, man.
I'm going to jump in because we're about out of time. I've got to thank our guest, Andrew Huggins. Andrew, it was great having you on here. Thanks a lot.
Thank you guys very much. This was awesome. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And Liz Allred, the Queen of Glitter, thank you for being with us.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you so much. And Andrew, I would love for you to find me on Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely.
Andrew, I'll
it's
get your contact information.
And then Allred, boom, that's it.
it's a pleasure to meet you on here, Andrew, really.
Absolutely. Well done,
yep,
man.
Yep.
You too, guys.
Strong,
thank
thanks.
You.
Dave Atwell, thank you very much. Papa Stro, and I will see everybody at the Tidewater Comic-Con this weekend and 7 o'clock p.m. on Saturday night. The Papa Stro Fan Club meets at Dave & Buster's in Virginia Beach. So this is Dr. John signing off for tonight. We'll see you next week with guest director Mike Roberts from Wilmington, the brand new comedy sitcom pilot, Vaughn. So join us then, Liz. I'll call you up to join our rowdy crowd, too. For that. So thanks a lot,
perfect,
everybody.
Thanks,
see you next week. Bye bye.
Safe travels, gentlemen. Y'all take care. Thank you.
Peace.
Thanks, guys.